Hey everybody, it's another edition of the Shay Anything Podcast. Doug Williams alongside Andy Martino once again. If you haven't subscribed, please do on your podcast app. Give us a rating, a review, rave about us. That would be great. Hi, Andy.
I think constructive criticism would be better than raves.
Yeah, but just for the sake of the numbers, raving is better.
Well, really?
Maybe rave with the stars. Give us 5 stars, and then you can criticize us however much you want.
So this is like an Uber kind of thing where you have to like sort of grovel for stars?
Yeah, maybe. And by the way, we are, because of Andy's ridiculously busy schedule, annoyingly busy, actually, let me just add that word in.
And, oh, you're annoyed by how busy I am. Life is so hard for Doug.
We are going to be coming to you Mondays from now on.
Because baseball happens 7 days a week, so what the hell
sure
is the difference?
Does. I think it'll be good because we're coming off a Saturday and a Sunday, and a lot of times like people group the weekend series together, and it's what'd you miss, and there's always a lot to talk about. Today included, by the way, I just want to apologize. I have a little bit of a cold.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here.
Stuff to be done.
I hope it's not disgusting to listen to, but I'll try and let Andy do most of the talking today. You are just coming off a column on SNY.TV about Jacob deGrom. A lot of speculation. You were on Twitter last night, John Harper, A-Rod in the booth talking about it, about whether or not he could have possibly been tipping pitches his last 2 starts. What'd you find out?
Right. So A-Rod definitely seemed to think, the way I heard it and the way Harp heard it, seemed to think that DeGrom was tipping his pitches. There was an at-bat earlier in the game. Josh Donaldson didn't even check swing, didn't even offer at a slider. And Alex in the booth was like, And then on Donaldson's home run in the fifth inning, A-Rod was basically said openly, like, well, it's almost like you know something's coming. I had wondered that after DeGrom's previous start where he wasn't very good against the Twins, because it's so unique when Jacob DeGrom isn't good that you start to get your spidey sense tingling and figure out, like, let me try to find out what's going on. Tipping is one of the first things that one's mind goes to. A couple people, including Nelson and Todd Hira that I talked to, didn't see it after the Twins start. So this morning, Monday morning, after the DeGrom start in Atlanta, I asked a bunch of people what they saw. I ended up talking to a guy who was sitting in the scout section in Atlanta and talking to all the scouts and told me that he didn't hear or see anything, meaning there was not only did this scout not see it, and that DeGrom, and by tipping we mean it could be anything that telegraphs what you're about to throw. Sometimes a guy will literally, like, move his finger a little differently before he throws an off-speed pitch, or he'll set his hands a little differently to tip a fastball. It's these little things, and opposing hitters sit in the dugout and say, oh, he's doing that. That means it's a fastball coming, or that means it's a breaking ball coming. So the scouts are looking for it. They didn't see anything. They weren't talking amongst themselves that there was anything. I did some more poking around, and I asked a guy who watched on TV who knows DeGrom well, and I put this in the column, and he said, hold on, let me read the exact. It was spreading velocities. This guy said, look, A-Rod, along with Alex Cora, Sean Green, Adria Belte, and Carlos Beltran were like the best guys of their generation for spotting tipping stuff and telling their dugouts about it, meaning it's possible that A-Rod saw something that these scouts didn't see, or maybe even that the Braves didn't see, so then what would be the point anyway? But no one else saw anything related to tipping and believed that it was the issue of spreading velocities. So in lay terms, you know that 94, 95 mile an hour cutter slash slider that everyone was all gaga over a couple starts ago in Miami?
Of DeGrom's.
Of DeGrom's. Well, that's actually the problem, that he's throwing his off speed too fast now. At least it's not Chris Sale throwing 88. It's not that kind of velocity problem.
Right, which is
it's
his highest.
Right. It's a too much velocity problem. That's the issue with Jacob DeGrom. His fastball is mid to upper 90s. His off speed is low to mid 90s. So according to this one of three people who had the same take, people with good eyes, he said, this is a quote, if you play at a 5 to 6 mile an hour range all the time, meaning separation between your fastball and your off speed, if it's only 5-6 mile an hour hit a difference, hitters will foul off good pitches and then handle mistakes. There needs to be variance of one pitch and possibly two that give you a 9 to 12 mile an hour variance. So DeGrom needs to be throwing mid-high 90s on the fastball, say high 80s, to maybe low 90s on the slider would be the ideal separation, or mix in more changeups, more curveballs. A Mets person and basically confirming that I had this right, said that, in fact, he didn't throw anything under 90 until the fifth inning, which was a curveball at 86 to Ronald Acuna Jr. So he doesn't get under 90 till the fifth inning. Well, guess what? Major league hitters can go, all right, it's coming in hot, it's coming in fast, I'm ready to square this up, whether he's throwing me the slider, whether he's throwing me the fastball. It's not enough separation, so they can gear up for something with velocity, and that's the problem.
Jason Vargas is like, must be nice, dude. I'm throwing 85.
These are high-class problems to have, but they still make him ineffective in the short term.
Did you follow up about how exactly he's just supposed to start throwing baseballs slower without slowing his arm down?
Well, that's a good question. Maybe that'd be a question for you as a pitcher, how one does that. I'm just a reporter.
Not qualified.
I haven't spoken to Jacob deGrom about this. He was en route to, in fact, the team got in at like 4:30 to Philadelphia today, so they're probably still sleeping. So it would be interesting to hear what he would have to say about it. Last year he won a Cy Young Award with a better speed variance.
Right.
And everyone was like, oh my God, he's better. He throws 95 on the slider. And you're like, well, honestly, when that came out in Miami, I was like, well, why would you change anything? I understand that one also has to continue to try to make adjustments and improve, but it's that variance of speed that seems to be getting him right now. The at-bats are so comfortable, and the hitters seem so comfortable. They're taking good hacks. They're not getting fooled. And that is what makes people think he's tipping. Why are these guys so comfortable? Well, they know what's coming. Well, maybe they know what's coming in that they know it's going to be 93
to 98. They're only preparing for one speed.
Right.
So if you guess wrong and he throws a fastball, not a slider, you could still hit it.
Exactly.
I have a question about tipping, and I know that your reporting suggests it's not what's happening, but still, we talk about tipping pitches all the time, and you did explain a little bit of it. But how is it that pitchers like do it at some point in their career and then suddenly it's discovered and they stink and then it goes away? Like, were they always doing it and it was just discovered? Or
that's a good question.
Like, has James Paxton always been tipping his pitches that they just realized? Like, does that just go away?
It was Carlos Beltran, by the way, who was listed in
that
by that guy who spotted that. Good asset for the Yankees to have Beltran on staff. That's a good question. I think this is ripe for a deeper piece of reporting on pitch tipping in general.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I can answer that. I would assume, and even Nelson, I'm sure, could answer this better than I could. And this is a conversation maybe we should have tonight on BNNY with him.
Call. Yeah.
But I would imagine these are things often that pop up, or else they'd have been detected long ago by opposing hitters. And James Paxton wouldn't have been an all-star last year if you always knew when the curveball was coming.
Yeah.
So I would think.
You bad habits just arrive and they go away. And
it can be small, too. Like, I've heard, like, a guy's going to take a deeper inhale, like, when he's about to gear up for the fastball. You go, fastball. It can be really subtle, and it's about, do you have in your dugout someone who can spot that and tell everybody else? And does it matter? Sometimes, like, if Aroldis Chapman in his days of throwing 105 is going to tip his fastball, well, so what?
Right, you knew it was coming anyway.
Yeah, so it's not, it probably gets a little bit overused as an accusation or like as a potential thing that's going on. In fact, one of the guys that I was texting with about this morning said sort of like sardonically about tipping, I hear that a lot, but if it's happening as much as people say, why don't we see guys getting hammered all the time?
Right.
You know, so it's one of those things, oh, he must be tipping. That's why I looked into it. And I think in this case, I feel pretty confident that he's not, because I talked to a lot of people and people who've watched DeGrom lately, and nobody spotted anything.
Okay. So he's throwing too hard. This, you said in the column, could be a very easy fix. Just assuming that his arm feels good and that maybe it's something mechanical or the pitch usage, that Jacob deGrom will be fine. I think it was last week on the podcast, you were talking about something you had written about the Mets offense and how offensively they're going to score runs and how their pitching now kind of has to live up to the task. What made Vargas kind of a interesting part of that discussion was, okay, if Vargas gives up 5 runs on the day he pitches, you got DeGrom the next day to rest the bullpen that needs to come to Vargas' aid. Vargas is now kind of snowballed into a different discussion, which is that he, it appears, is in one of those ruts where he really can't get
many
outs.
Not going to be good.
Right.
Yeah, he's just
so
not good.
So when DeGrom's not good, or not great, it kind of shines even more light on Vargas. What do you think, seriously, Mickey Callaway and Brody Van Wagenen are thinking right now about Vargas being in their rotation in the next couple weeks and months?
They're thinking, oh, God. Because what are you going to – I mean, it is what it is. This is a Dallas Keuchel conversation, obviously. We've had that conversation. And Vargas' performance is directly related to the Mets' slight uptick in interest in Keuchel. I've said that before. That's true. But at the same time, I think for the sake of balance and what a team official would always say to these kinds of I think that a place like New York or Boston or a place where there's intense interest in baseball becomes somewhat unique, and sometimes the teams get a little annoyed in that it's like, show me a team that is five good starters deep, right? Right. So, yeah, Jason Vargas stinks. Can we look at some of the other fifth starters? I'm just saying, this is how team officials right. would respond. Yeah, he stinks. What do you want? That's a bullpen day. It's the fifth starter day. You know, so can we top time on Jason Vargas, please? That's what they would say. I would say that Dallas Keuchel would give you a deeper, better rotation, and that would obviously also be true. This isn't a defense of running Jason Vargas out there, but it's a reminder of the context. Again, how many teams are five starters deep?
Yes, I think the fan response to that, and I'm not entirely sure it's wrong, would be this is not a fifth starter. This is like a non-starter right now.
The fan response to that I got, I tweeted something like that yesterday, and I think the first reply was something like, we found Jeff Wilpon's burner account, which no, it was not Jeff telling me that or anything related to this, not spoken to any sources about this. I have my own opinion that Vargas is no good. But I'm just saying, let's put it in the context for a second. There's like, I remember this, I was on the beat with Ollie Perez. Perez became, and I understand he had a bigger contract. It's not exactly analogous. But just the idea that we attach ourselves to these storylines and they take on a life of their own, which can sometimes exceed the actual importance. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's like momentum builds and builds
and
builds.
And now it's like, Jason Vargas Day is upon us. Winter is here.
I remember the last time Vargas... I think even it might have been his first start of the year, which was 5 innings, 2 earned runs, 8 hits. Like, that's a 5-starter outing. Perfectly fine.
Yeah.
And I think it was my colleague Eamon McEnany on Sports Night was like, I realized that Dallas Keuchel was trending, and I was like, oh, did he sign somewhere? And it was no, it was because Mets fans were freaking out because someone named Dallas
Mets
Keuchel
Twitter.
Was
Let's
pitching.
Make a difference between Mets Twitter and Mets fans.
Yes. I
Mets Twitter is like 1% of Mets fans, and
there's not as easy a way to gather to really take the temperature of Mets fans other than this resource we have at our disposal.
I picture
at all
a bunch
times.
Of nice people sitting in their living rooms going, well, Jason tried tonight.
Right.
And
he tried his hardest. And, you know, he always looks like it is a really difficult
job. And then there's
job.
One angry person in every family that gets a Twitter account, and those are what we see on Mets Twitter.
ERA right now at 14.21.
Is now, that bad?
It's not good. I can tell you that just from my high school pitching days. Mm-hmm. So with
what
Keuchel,
was your career ERA?
Don't know.
Come on.
I don't know. I mean, look, summer leagues, high school. Let's not go there. Dallas Keuchel, you said this is a Dallas Keuchel conversation. It's almost like he's out there as this mythical creature and will never sign just so that
it is
fan
amazing,
bases
like, right,
and writers.
Right.
Like,
one day he's actually going to sign a contract and be like, oh, so that happened.
Like, oh, that's his contract. Okay. Like, that's how much money
he's making. This seems like almost impossible.
What I believe to be maybe the biggest issue here is not that, you know, Hector Santiago could come up, help the Mets out. It is that the idea that Seth Lugo could come do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we went into this season looking at Seth Lugo as maybe their most important bridge guy before Familia and Diaz. And now the idea of him joining the rotation. Where do you think teams stand on the idea of taking a really valuable bullpen piece and giving him 5 innings every fifth day?
Well, I think any smart team understands that 5 innings every fifth day is more valuable than one inning a lot of days, because at the end of the year, you're getting 150, 200 innings versus like, what, 60 or something.
Right.
So that's, I mean, this argument goes back to how do you use Jabba Chamberlain? Really, truly, it was like, is he a starter? Or is he, and the reason the Yankees tried everything they could to make him a starter is because they wanted 200 innings of him instead of a 25% of that. So Seth Lugo was a good enough starter when they tried him, where you could argue that he would have given the team more value over the past couple of years in their rotation. But he's not stretched out or anything now. The ship has kind of sailed for a while.
Do you think the Mets are a better team with Seth Lugo in their rotation right now? Instead of Jason. So Jason Vargas goes to the bullpen.
You know, it's a weird thing. I admit. I know what I just said. So there's a difference between what the numbers say and what you feel like your eyes are telling you.
Right.
Because if someone's available most days, that feels better. But if they're available to give you more innings over the course of the season, it actually is better. Does that make sense?
Well, let me put it this way.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I do know what you mean. And every day, a different starting pitcher goes out there for the Mets, and there are varying levels of confidence, right? So Jacob DeGrom goes out there, you're not psyched to have Seth Lugo available.
Mm-hmm.
When Vargas goes out there, you are grateful to have potentially two or three innings out of Seth Lugo if you need them.
I think there's also ways that you can finesse this. You can use an opener with Vargas. What if you just piggybacked Oswalt all the time with him or something? You know, there's a lot of different. You could try to nurse him through. You can find what part of this lineup is the least likely to hurt Vargas and say, all right, he's going to pitch in. He's our quote-unquote fifth starter, but he's going to come in the third inning, and we're going to try to get him through the sixth, and we're going to start Oswalt, or we're going to start, you know, there's all kinds of ways you could do.
Sometimes when you hear that type of explanation, though, I can just hear people screaming Dallas Keuchel in my ear.
Well, right, and all those nice people who don't tweet are like, well, this is an interesting solution. Good for Mickey Callaway. They just don't tweet.
Is there any new information as to the Mets actually talking to Dallas Keuchel's
camp? No, and by lack of new information, I mean, I continue to ask the question to the point where people are probably like, would you stop asking us about Keuchel and Kimbrel? But, you know, it's my job.
You're out here dispelling theories that Jacob DeGrom's tipping pitches, and so you're doing, you know, some favors for the organization while also
I don't do favors, I just deliver facts.
Prod them. No, that just happens to be a convenient piece of information for the team.
That's an interesting question. Would the Mets want this out there or not? I don't know the answer to that. They'd probably rather that nothing is ever said about anyone. You know,
it's more convenient for them. It's like when Brody told you that he wishes you
wouldn't.
Like,
yeah.
What percent did he say you had?
He said that we were. I asked him on live on the Hot Stove Show at the winter meetings, what percentage of what you do I or we, does the media figure out and report on? He said, I think you guys get about 10%, and that other 90% is key. I said, what you were alluding to is, I said, what's the ideal? He said, well, 0% would be the ideal. And to his credit, he gave me a little like tip of the cap a couple days after we reported on the like Syndergaard to Yankees talks. I was like, all right, now that the dust has settled on that, you know, how much of that did we get right? And he just kind of like winks. He's like, let's just say you got into the 90% that time.
Oh.
It's like, okay.
That's so weird that we really, if we really only know 10%. I don't know if I believe it, but.
Yeah, well, maybe that's part of the deception is the number that he gave.
I'm trying to figure out if Dallas Keuchel is, there are no middling starting pitchers.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't answer your question. You asked me if there's anything new. No.
They're no, still, you did.
They're still talking to him, but nothing seems to have moved forward.
Our producer, Jeff Goldman, put Gio Gonzalez's name on our rundown. And you were like, he's on the Yankees.
He is.
Well, he is.
But he has an opt-out.
On Saturday, he has an opt-out. I know that we don't get any of your Yankee reporting on the Shea Anything podcast because we talk Mets, but...
That's my position, is we should never talk Yankees on a podcast in some way.
Is it your impression that Cashman's going to call Gio up at some point, or is he just going to...
If he has another decent start, I bet you the Yankees call him up, give him a shot up here, and see where that goes. Because they're thin enough. Because you could put Domingo Germán in a similar situation where he's piggybacking. You might as well try it, considering he's been decent the last two... I think he's made three in Scranton, and two of them have been okay. Maybe it's one.
Maybe he's
made two, and the most recent one was okay. Either one, he had a stinker and then got a little better. His opt-out's on Saturday. I bet, and you can always finesse an opt-out, too. Yankees could go to Scott Boras and say, can we all just agree to make this April 28th now? And they can just do that.
Okay.
That's been done before. If he doesn't seem quite ready, but they say, hey, we like what we're seeing. I bet Gio Gonzalez makes a start for the Yankees.
It's just fascinating to me that if you're a Met fan, the only possible savior on the free agent market is Dallas Keuchel, who is this incredibly complex pitcher.
Well, to be fair, the free agent market, I mean, it's
over.
It's April.
Yeah, it's over. That's the point I'm making.
What about Kimbrel? I mean, it solves the problem from a different angle.
I just keep going to Kimbrell and thinking, why, if I'm Craig Kimbrell, would I take a setup job with the Mets for probably less money than teams that have no bullpen, like the Cubs or Nationals, would give me to probably close?
Plus, if you look at his numbers, he's not that good in non-save situations.
Yeah, it's just a different, it's a different animal.
I don't know for a fact that in their Mets talks with Kimbrell, they haven't talked to him about the ninth inning. I can't say that they haven't.
Right.
I mean, if you have Kimbrell and Diaz on the same team, and you have I want to be very clear, I'm speculating now. What I'm not speculating about is that the Mets have talked to Kimbrell and been talking to Kimbrell. That is true. And nothing's close.
Right.
But that's, you know, it's
Do you get a sense that they've talked more with Kimbrell than Keuchel?
Depends who you ask.
Huh.
They've talked to both.
You know, one...
But so what I'm saying is that I can't guarantee that they're saying, hey, we've got Diaz for like four more years.
Right.
He can pitch the eighth for half a season. I'm not guaranteeing that they haven't had that thought.
I was just thinking about Andrew Miller because he did it with Cleveland and he did it with the Yankees. He just bought in and came into the game whenever.
And you can get paid that way now, too.
Right.
That helps. This was a conversation I had with Adam Ottavino in spring training when I said, how is it that you've got you, Britton, Chapman, Betances, before he like died, but at the time Betances was healthy, and it was like how are the Yankees able to get buy-in on all these non-save right. situations? And he said, because we're all getting paid anyway. We're not, that's that simple. We've right. all got our contracts, so we're not like jockeying over who gets the saves.
There used
now
to be,
you get paid for getting holds and whatnot.
There used to be a world where Adam Ottavino would be like, I'm 30 something. I've been a really good reliever for a long time. I should be a closer now.
We're no longer
Whereas,
in that
like,
world.
Right. Yes. Ottavino took a job knowing that technically he wouldn't get that promotion because the money is the same.
Yeah, and they're not arguing over who gets in what situation because they're all getting paid, except for Betances. But before he got hurt, it was like, well, he's going to get paid. He's obviously still in Betances. He's going to get paid soon. So that is a to the Met point with Kimbrell. In theory, he could talk about non-closing and still get paid. I haven't gotten the sense that I want to be clear. A lot of speculation in this conversation. Here's what I know. The Mets and Kimbrell have talked. The Mets and Keuchel have talked. The Mets are keeping an open line with both. Beyond that, what's the details of these talks are being kept nicely under wraps by all sides.
Here's the other part of this. The division looks great.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that's the thing. Keep Kimbrell from Philly or Washington.
Kimbrell and Keuchel. I mean,
right.
A lot of these teams could use both of these guys.
Yeah.
Either or.
The Nationals are crazy to not have already signed Kimbrell, by the way.
Cubs are too.
Yeah.
There are teams that should be competing that went into the season, and give Brody credit, the Mets were not this. Teams that just went in the year thinking, I think our bullpen will be fine. We got this guy who throws hard. And like the Red Sox?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what did you think was going to happen? And if you're a Met fan, the nice part is you never sat this offseason and thought, gosh, our GM's not doing anything to improve this team.
No, whether it's going to work
like
or not.
Like, if you're a Cub fan, they didn't do anything.
No. In fact, there was at one point where the Cubs were really – I've never reported this before. The Cubs were really close to signing Adam Warren. And they, in order to sign Adam Warren, they needed to trade Addison Russell. And they couldn't get any takers for Addison Russell, so they didn't sign Adam Warren. That's all lockdown information from sources. So, like, that tells you how tight they were. They wouldn't even get a guy like Adam Warren without dumping payroll. And that's not what Brody's been doing.
No. Do you think Brody is too new to the GM world to make a move so that a division rival doesn't?
No.
Like, is that an old school thing?
No, absolutely not. That's got to be a motivation. In fact, didn't Brody or Jeff Wilpon say at the time of the Seattle trade that what part of what they were doing was trying to keep Diaz away from the Phillies? Wasn't that said publicly? Pretty sure that was said at the
me,
press
but...
conference. So yeah, that can be a thought. I'm sure that's part of Brody's pitch. Every time a GM wants to make an expenditure, he obviously has to sell his own owners on it. And if Brody's trying to pitch any of these moves to his owners to write the check, I wouldn't be surprised if that competition factor has come up.
Speaking of Brody, and look, this just may be a conversation that we unapologetically have to have every single week until we figure it out or it figures itself out. Dom Smith gets a hit every two at-bats.
Dom Smith's a good player.
He's like hitting just below 500. Then you have J.D. Davis goes yard again last night. Right now, the Mets are their best roster. it would seem. I know Jed Lowry. Okay, so Jed Lowry for Guillaume would be my one.
Okay.
So that's obvious. But I'm just not sure where Todd Frazier fits.
He doesn't at all.
He doesn't. So what do you think? Like, are they going to
He's the shortstop.
Right. He's going to play shortstop for three innings.
So what are they going to do?
He's going to do the exact same thing he's been doing in his rehab games, just in the big leagues.
That's right.
Is it possible that Brody can get creative and trade from a surplus to get something that he needs, including back-end starting pitching?
You can trade Todd Frazier as long as it's 2012.
Come on. You don't think Todd Frazier has any value?
I do not.
You couldn't trade him for anything?
Well, you could trade something. You could trade him for me. he's not appealing to other teams at this stage in his career.
So what do you think happens to Todd Frazier?
It's a great question. I think they have to let him play and see if he can play better than it seems that – see if he can exceed expectations and reestablish some value to his team. That's a guy – yeah, of course you can dump him and get nothing or get, like, some single-A arm that might turn into something in several years. I mean, you're not getting anything that you've ever –
You're not getting a big league return.
No. So – You just gotta let him play for a while, see what happens.
That's a problem.
Well, it could be.
By the way, I'm not trying to look. Todd Frazier is a solid defensive third baseman who can hit a home
run. He's a good, really good defensive third baseman.
My issue is that I don't necessarily want to mess with the rotation they currently have in the infield, and I'm anxious to see Jed Lowry play because of the season he's had the last couple of years. So I don't really know that. If the Mets say, like you said, we have to just let Todd Frazier play, maybe we'll get more value out of him. Maybe he'll be great. And back to 2012, Todd Frazier, who comes out? Especially if Lowry's close behind him.
Yeah. Who else is going to come out?
If you are Brody, you've been raving about J.D. Davis ever since he got him.
Part of what happened.
Don't you desperately want to keep showing him off? He's got this 900 sparkling OPS.
They did sign him as a complimentary piece, trade for him as a complimentary piece. He is a little victory of their analytics department. Walker Lockett, Hector Santiago, and Davis were the three guys that they were sort of most proud of acquiring, not Edwin Diaz type guys, you know what I'm saying,
right.
Under the radar. Davis is the one that's worked out, but they never envisioned him as a starting player this year. That's why they signed Lowry. That's why they already had Frazier. So I think if you can find a role for Davis that's not playing every day, they could do it matchup-based. I mean, without me thinking totally through all the roster implications and not having I don't think that Todd Frazier's ever going to be a guy who plays 6-7 days a week. So you probably can finesse it somehow.
Would you be feeling footsteps if you were Juan Lagares or Brandon Nimmo?
Anyone should.
Or Keon Broxton.
Lagares and Broxton probably, that's a redundancy that doesn't help because we only have 25 spots here to talk about. It's tough because of Lagares' contract. I want to say Lagares is out of options, but I should fact check that before I go ahead and say it on a podcast.
Yeah.
So that's a tricky one. Nimmo, if Nimmo doesn't play well, and I know that he's started to improve a little bit, but we talked about this. I don't see any problem with sending Nimmo to AAA if his performance requires it. That helps solve a problem.
That would be honestly a little bit shocking, and it shouldn't be.
No, of course not. He hasn't accomplished anything in the big leagues. He had a nice season last year, which is great, but he's not out of the woods as far as like total job security. None of them should be. Once you get a big contract, you are, for practical reasons. Robinson Cano is hitting, 195 or something right now?
By the way, Nimmo's been better.
Yeah, I know. He's trended upward, and he probably will. Look, he's a major league player. Don't get me wrong. But you have to look at who has options, who's performing, who can do what. Jeff McNeil can be, at this point, basically an everyday outfielder if you need him to be, and you have a crowded infield. And I think McNeil is a higher priority than Nimmo to be in the lineup every day. I think McNeil's a better offensive player than Nimmo. Right.
All right.
Correct?
I want, and McNeil needs to play every day.
Right. Yeah.
That would seem like the obvious conclusion that everyone is arriving at right now.
Yeah.
So I just think Nimmo... last season, three-game hit streak, couple multi-hit games. He had too good of a year last year for you because he's hitting 230 to send down. So the redundancy in center field is where I would look if I'm looking at any outfielder.
It's tough, though. Broxton.
I know. I like both players.
You didn't acquire Broxton to send him to the minor leagues.
Agreed.
You acquired him to be a contributor to your team.
What'd you do on Saturday night?
Saturday night, my wife and I went to Barcade.
Oh, nice.
Which was fun.
I like Barcade.
Played some pinball and then came home and watched our good friend Ron announce his news on the air. My wife and I watched that together and knew that was coming and wasn't looking forward to hearing him say that, but was proud of him for being able to just present something personal on the air in front of the world and just goes without saying that we're wishing him the best as he does has his procedure.
Definitely.
So that was a big. That was what was weighing on my mind Saturday.
I'm not nearly as close to Ron as you are. He's always been incredibly gracious to me. I did not know it was coming, so I was surprised, just like the rest of you at home. And we wish Ron nothing but the best, and hope to see him and hear his voice again soon. So, Ronnie, we're thinking of you, and we wish you a speedy recovery. Get well.
Those of us who love Ron, that's. And that's just something that's very much on our minds as he goes through this. And I can't imagine I'm not nearly like interesting or important enough to people to have to put that out there, really. Like if I was gone, I could probably just take a leave. And to be dealing with something, going in, doing a procedure, and then having to say it like that can't be fun. So just all the credit to him for just even just doing that. And then, I said this on Twitter, if you didn't see it, he is one of those people, like, when we watch baseball games, we feel close. We feel connected to the people who announce the games, I think, because they're in our homes every day, month after month after month. And sometimes, oftentimes, you might be disappointed if you met these people in person and had a chance to talk to them. They're out there doing a job. Ron would not be one of those instances. He is so warm and so caring and so generous with his knowledge of the game. And someone who's lucky to be his friend, just the personal conversations we've had, the level of depth there that he brings, he is every bit what you hope he is and more. So our thoughts are with him, of course, as he deals with this thing for a little bit and then comes back.
Totally agree. My Saturday night was a Mucinex commercial, so there's no use getting into it at this point. But we thank everybody for listening. As always, we'll be back next Monday. It would seem every Monday going forward because of...
I'm around Mondays.
Yeah, Andy being around Mondays.
It's really important. It's really important to me not to annoy you with my business.
We cater to Andy's needs.
Wow.
That's what we do.
Doug, well, never mind. Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll